great pleasure to introduce to you a real old farmer who has a story to tell of how they came into these Peace River country and some of their experiences in their early days. Here is Mrs. Tuck.
In 1916, the British War Office sent out a call for volunteers to join the newly formed Women's Legion. The reason for this was to release the men driving army vehicles. I joined up, and as I knew how to drive, I was posted to the number one company in London and put on one of the War Office cars. Here I stayed for a year, and then, wishing to go back into the country, transferred to the new company at Virginia Water, where the Canadian Forestry Corps were cutting timber in Windsor Park. It was here I met my husband. He had been badly gassed and was unfit for active service. At the outbreak of war, he was in northern BC with the Injaneka Company and heard nothing of the war until he came to Pouce Coupe at Christmas time. Like Englishmen the world over, he set out to join up. Without delay, he put on his snowshoes, headed for Gruard, and enlisted in the 49th Edmonton Regiment. The war over, he returned to Canada. I followed 6 months later in the Minnedosa, a Canadian ship that was transporting wives and other details. And this is how I came to live in this country. My husband had gone over the Edson Trail in 1911 and found on a quarter section east of the Pouce Coupe River. So we decided to return there and make our home. My sister Olive came with me, as it was rather a plunge into the unknown. The Minnedosa was a small ship, the weather frightful, and our accommodation poor. But we were young and on a great adventure. Arrived at Quebec, we were offloaded into a large immigration hall. After we had passed the medical, etc., we slipped quietly away and bought ourselves tickets on the ordinary passenger train. We had a very enjoyable trip. Good meals, the Minnedosa fare had been rather grim. But on arriving at Edmonton, my husband was not there, and I realized that perhaps we had done a foolish thing. So we sat on a bench and waited. We noticed that two ladies were eyeing us curiously. One of them came across and said very sternly, "Are you the two girls who are lost?" "Oh, not lost," I said, putting on as bold a face as I could. "My husband is meeting us here." "Well," she went on, "he was here for hours and is terribly upset when you did not arrive on the proper train. He's gone for a meal and will be back again." He arrived soon after and was too pleased to see us to scold. Edmonton was still in the stage of mud roads and broad sidewalks and looked very unfinished to us. We were much amused on sitting down to breakfast the next morning when a swing door flew open. A girl rushed in and said, "Swish mush," then vanished and returned to say, "It's off." We had to wait till the next morning and felt rather let down when two plates of porridge, oatmeal porridge, were put in front of us. Later in the day, we could hardly believe our eyes when we saw a house on the move. This was something we had never seen before and had a good laugh about it. Our next adventure was a trip by the ED and BC Railway. This was full of thrills, no sleeping accommodation, a stove at one end of each carriage to care for the heating. After an hour rattling and bumping, we came to an abrupt halt. "Train off the line again," said someone. The men all got off to help push the train on again. My husband soon came back laughing. "Nothing wrong," he said. "The engineer expects to meet a lady friend at the next stop, and she hadn't time to shave before he left Edmonton." Several times the train did go off the rails, but plenty of help was always available. Everyone on the train was very chatty and friendly, and we eventually arrived at Grand Prairie, rather pleased to get off the horrid, bumpy, noisy, rattling little monster. We stayed several days shopping and for necessities and making friends while we waited for the wagon and team to arrive, which Spencer had arranged for before he left Pouce Coupe. At last we were ready for the last lap of our journey. Our possessions were all safely tucked into the wagon box, topped off with an iron bedstead. No mattress. This, my husband said, could be made of ticking stuffed with straw later on. On started to walk with Spencer, who always preferred walking to any other kind of locomotion. So off we went. Our first night was spent at Beaver Lodge, a stopping place, a new word to us, where we had an excellent meal and comfortable beds. Meals everywhere were 50 cents and all one could possibly eat, and pies were large and cut into four slices. Wherever we stopped, we were warmly welcomed and had to relate in great detail all that was happening outside. Next morning, we set off gaily again, and the walkers announced their intention of walking all the way, 100 miles. Fortunately, we had fine weather as the wagon box was open to the elements. Literally hundreds of prairie chicks flew up as we went along. There was no road, of course, just a bumpy trail, and plenty of grain spilled out as the settlers took their loads to the weekly train at Grand Prairie. In due course, we arrived at Horse Lake, where Mrs. Brainard, already famous for her lavish hospitality, lived. The cabin had a sod roof, but was wonderfully cozy and warm. The country had become more and more sparsely settled as we came along, and on the third day, the only sign of man's intrusion into the wilderness was at Hay Lake, where we stopped for dinner. That night we slept at a large, imposing log house with a wide veranda on Swan Lake, such a pretty sight, and again, so much friendly interest in us. My husband knew everyone as we came along, and of course they were very interested to see what he had brought back from England with him. The consensus of opinion was that I wouldn't stay very long. Next day brought us to the end of our journey, a dear little log cabin that was to be for me a very happy home. And this was how I came to Pooscoopy. We were 9 miles by the trail from the settlement, and there were no settlers on our side of the river. The nearest neighbors were two old bachelors many miles away, and very glad they were to see us arrive. Homesteading held no terrors for me. My father was a soldier, and I was born in the island of St. Helena on the west coast of Africa, and spent my childhood in Zululand, where he decided to stay after the last Zulu war. The first winter was spent getting out logs for a barn and roaming about the surrounding countryside on snowshoes, enjoying the beauty and stillness after so many years of war. One stormy night in January, we were startled out of sleep by a loud banging on the door. On opening, we saw two lads, almost exhausted. They had been into Pooscoopy and on their way home lost their trail. Fortunately for them, they stumbled on ours. Snow was falling, the wind blowing, and the cold bitter. They had almost come to the end of their strength when the clouds lifted, the moon shone out, and they saw our cabin ahead. We gave them a good hot meal, divided up our blankets, and put them to sleep on the floor. Next morning they seemed none the worse, and set off to find their cabin. There were two Belgian lads who had been told fortunes were to be made trapping in the peace. One could speak a little English, but the only phrase the other knew was, "and that's a cinch," which he injected into the conversation whenever he thought it right. So far they had caught nothing, and shortly after left the country. Gradually people filed on the quarters around us, and we became a very happy community. My chief pastime, besides making a garden, was discovering the wildflowers, so different to our English ones, and also the birds. There were very few around us at first, but they gradually increased in number as the land was cleared. And one day, sitting quietly in the garden, I counted 40 different species. By this time I had acquired books on both birds and flowers. We were kept busy putting up enough feed for the cow and team of cayuses we acquired when spring came. There was plenty all around us. Grass and pea vine up to our shoulders grew in great abundance, but it had to be cut with a scythe, collected and staked. Looking back over the years, the chief thing that I remember is the fine quality of the early settlers, always cheerful and ready to lend a hand to a neighbor, and in the light of the present day, unbelievably honest. Cabins were seldom locked. Anyone was welcome, in case of need, to enter and make a cup of coffee and have a bite to eat. And the only rule was, wash the dishes and fill the wood box.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Tuck. This has certainly been a treat for us.